Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be, and we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings.
Akwai, greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Sin conocerte, sin poderme enamorar por no tenerte, y yo esperando por llegar a verte. De repente llegas tú tan suavemente, y de un sueño me despierto plácidamente. Algo me va a suceder, yo me siento enloquecer. Eras tú a quien soñé sin detenerme. A fuego lento, tu amor me va creciendo. Poco a poco voy cayendo en ti, te voy queriendo. Lento, a fuego lento, tú me vas convenciendo. Yo soy para ti, tú eres para mí. pertenece. Se llamaba Sinayar, mi gran ausente. Y el deseo de tenerte siempre en mi mente. Mi corazón lloraba por no verte. De repente llegas tú, tan suavemente. Y de un sueño me despierto placidamente. Algo me va a suceder. Yo me siento enloquecer. Eras tú a quien soñé sin detenerme. A fuego lento tu amor me va creciendo. Poco a poco voy cayendo en ti, te voy queriendo. Lento, a fuego lento tú me vas convenciendo. Yo soy para ti, tú eres para mí, solo para mí. A fuego lento tu amor me va creciendo. Poco a poco voy cayendo en ti, te voy queriendo. Lento, a fuego lento tú me vas convenciendo. Yo soy para ti, tú eres para mí, solo para mí.
Music from Mexican singer-songwriter Jennifer Pena off Univision Records CD, our chorus musical Mexicano. The name of that song, E Fuego Lento. Ashque, greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. Today's program, we focus on the indigenous and poor people's struggle in Chiapas, Mexico. We are honored to have as our guests in the studio a very fine compañera, Miss Melody Gonzalez. Melody recently participated in the historic 2005 Zapatista Encuentro, a very special gathering in Chiapas, Mexico. Melody Gonzalez is a Chicana whose family heritage is from the indigenous Tarasco Mexican Indian people. She is a staff person for the National Student Farm Worker Alliance in Interfaith Action. Both organizations work in solidarity with the Coalition of Immokalee Workers here in Southwest Florida. I have the pleasure to know Melody as a personal friend from Yatkishi Native Center's support work with the Student Farm Worker Alliance and Coalition of Immokalee Workers. Many of our worldwide listeners have previously heard our wonderful interview with Melody from the 2005 Immokalee Encuentro Wolf Mountain Radio series. I want to remind our listeners that this interview and many other fine Wolf Mountain Native Radio programs are always available to hear on RadioForAll.net webcast archives. Simply go to www.radioforall.net, then type in Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, in the blank search window, which will then open up the list of our programs. Melody Gonzalez and I share many of the same concerns for peace, social, economic, and environmental justice. We both do coalition building and work to empower people for global justice. Melody and I are dedicated to the well-being of indigenous peoples and support the rights of sovereignty and self-determination for indigenous peoples throughout the world. The situation in Chiapas, Mexico, exemplifies the struggle of indigenous and poor people in what's now called Mesoamerica. The Zapatismo movement and the EZLN, the Zapatista National Liberation Army, under the guidance and leadership of Maya Indians, is an important and historic struggle for all to understand. Commentators and writers on the subject of the Chiapas Uprising often consider the January 1994 takeover of four towns in the Chiapas state of Mexico as the start of the Zapatista Rebellion. Certainly the occupation of the 16th century colonial town of San Cristobal de las Casas by indigenous peoples in EZLN on that day, in which the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, was announced, was an important historic moment. However, as a Native American, I view this struggle beginning in 1519, when that Spanish invader and murderer, Hernan Cortes, washed ashore in Mesoamerica. What is now called Mexico was a land of diverse Native nations. Several examples of highly sophisticated societies include the ancient Olmec and Maya, as well as Zapotec, Mixtec, Toltec, and Mexica. 514 years after Columbus's arrival in the Western Hemisphere, there are still 56 different indigenous peoples with their distinct cultures and languages in what's now called Mexico. Several more well-known Indian peoples are the Maya, Huichols, Tarahumaras, Nahuas, Mexicas, Purépechas, Mixtecos, Otomis, Totonacas, and Zapotecas. In Chiapas, for example, the Tetztalis, Totziltilis, Tojolabalis, and Chamulas, and others have been living in extreme poverty, discrimination, and socioeconomic neglect by the Mexican national government. The implementation of NAFTA would greatly hurt Chiapas, indigenous peoples, and the poor by exacerbating the polarization of wealth and control over the land by the wealthy at the expense of the poor. Indigenous peoples and the poor barely survived prior to the North American Free Trade Agreement. NAFTA caused more misery and poverty and is a direct threat to the survival of Mexico's indigenous peoples and the poor. The Zapatistas are dedicated to supporting the poor of Mexico. Their EZLN forces fight against the oppression of the national government, which the PRI party abusively ruled 70 years over the poor. Indigenous peoples had no cultural or human rights. Proper health care, education, access to good homes, and democratic participation in government were non-existent. Racism and discrimination against indigenous peoples were common and routine government practice, which sadly still continues today. For indigenous peoples of Chiapas, this was a continuation of colonialism. Most of the Indian peoples tried to live tribally and maintain their cultural lifeways. Land is sacred, and native villages held the land communally, farming under the ejido system, where the land was administered by the community. The Mexican national government over the years broke up the ejidos and have promoted privatization of Indian lands to non-native development. 77% of the farms in Chiapas were under rich private property landowners. Cattle ranches, coffee, cotton, eucalyptus, and rubber plantations are corporate agribusiness enterprises that the government of Mexico supported. Multinational timber, oil, and mining companies have also devastated the culture and environment of indigenous peoples in Chiapas. In the 1980s, I personally had the opportunity to travel through Chiapas and see firsthand some of the destruction from agriculture, energy, and forest resource exploitations. These are major concerns of the indigenous peoples and the Zapatistas. The EZLN's land reform program, as stated in the Agrarian Revolutionary Law, call for the return of farmland to the people. They demand that all large land estates will become collective farms for all poor peasants in order to provide food for their families and well-being of the village. The Zapatistas also support environmental protection, a basic concern of indigenous peoples who consider Mother Earth as sacred. Article 13 of the Revolutionary Agrarian Law states, quote, "Zones of virgin jungle and forest will be preserved. There will be reforestation campaigns in the principal's zones," unquote. Article 14 states, quote, "The riverheads, rivers, lakes, and oceans are the collective property of the Mexican people, and they will be cared for by not polluting them and punishing their misuse. unquote. The Sandinistas EZLN communique of June 12, 1994, often referred to as the Declaration from the Lacandon Jungle, states 11 demands: independence, freedom, democracy, justice, peace, land, food, shelter, health, education, and work. For the indigenous peoples of Chiapas, political, cultural, and economic and social autonomy, as well as self-determination, must become a reality. To me, these are all fundamental human rights. We here at Yad Kiddushin Native Center hope that the people of Mexico will soon live in a country where these human rights are finally fulfilled for all peoples. I would like to now welcome Ms. Melanie Gonzalez to Wolf Mountain Native Radio.
My name is Melody Gonzalez. I'm originally from what is now called Santa Ana, California. My parents are both from Mexico, from the state of Michoacán. I believe that my ancestors were the Tarascan brothers and sisters. Those were the native people of the state of Michoacán. I am now working here in Immokalee. I work with the Student Farm Worker Alliance and with Interfaith Action. Both groups work in partnership with the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. And recently, the Coalition of Immokalee Workers asked me to represent them at a meeting that was taking place in Chiapas with our brothers and sisters, the Zapatistas, in one of their autonomous indigenous communities. The Zapatistas in July came out with a 6th declaration where they talk about who they are, what they stand for, what their vision is for Mexico, what their vision is for the world. They talk about this being a movement for humanity and against neoliberalism. And so after this declaration came out, one of the things that they wanted to start in Mexico was something, and what they're calling the Other Campaign, which is a social agenda that will come from the people. Governments are always imposing their agendas on our society. But the Zapatistas felt that it was time that all of the people of the left in Mexico came together to construct their own agenda for Mexico, whether it's through a new constitution, a new form type of government that respects the rights of all individuals, especially indigenous peoples in Mexico, who for so long have been the most discriminated groups in Mexican society. They had 6 meetings where they invited people from all over Mexico to come and give their word about their communities, the struggle that they're involved in, and what their proposals are for this other campaign. I was invited to go as a part of a collective that called itself the Other Campaign on the Other Side. It was a group of Mexicans and Chicanos, who are sons and daughters of Mexican immigrants, who are all working on different struggles here on this side of the border. But us going meant that we were a part of the discussions of what's going on in Mexico, because we do not accept that border that was imposed on us, and that border for us does not exist. And the Mexican brothers and sisters that are on this side of the border have been displaced from their country. Many did not come because they wanted to, but were forced to come because of economic reasons. We went to as a collective, but also as individual organizations. I, like I said, was representing the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. In the Zapatista community that we visited, we had the opportunity to present about the work that we're doing, and so I talked to them about the CIW, our recent victory against Taco Bell, the different working conditions and the wages and the slavery cases, and then I talked just about our solidarity work with the Zapatistas and how we're going to support this other campaign, what they're doing. One of the proposals, for example, that we had as a collective was that we wanted to invite the Zapatistas to have a meeting with us on this side of the border, somewhere in Los Angeles, perhaps. Another proposal is that we want to be able to put together curriculum that talks about the history and the struggle of the Mexicans on this side of the border, because many people in Mexico are not very aware of what the situation is like on this side of the border. They often think that, you know, the people who leave and come to this side of the border live in luxury and they're making a lot of money because this is supposed to be the land of opportunities, but they don't know that people are working out in the fields and receiving sub-poverty wages, that people are working in factories where their rights are not being respected. There's a lot of things that they're not aware of, and so part of this curriculum that we want to do is just talk more about what the reality is here, but then also the struggles that have taken place. Some people don't know about the Chicano movement, for example, of the 1960s, the struggle here in Immokalee now, and so we want to be able to provide this curriculum, not just for the Zapatistas communities, but for all communities in Mexico to learn about our struggle here on this side of the border. In my time there, I also had the opportunity to just talk to a lot of wonderful people, including a Zapatista brother who worked in Immokalee in 1992. And when I interviewed him and asked him about the conditions, they're the same conditions as they are today, 11 years later. He talked about the bad wages, about the discrimination, and one of the things that his friends here in Immokalee didn't know was that he was a Zapatista. He didn't tell them because that was in 1992. The Zapatista uprising took place in 1994. He already knew that it was going to happen, but could not share that, obviously, for security reasons. And now in his message that he gave me to the brothers and sisters here in Immokalee was that he hopes that they can continue to be in the struggle and fight for their rights here, but if they chose to go back to Mexico, he wanted to let them know that there's a lot of people that are coming together to really build a strong movement in Mexico, and so they were more than welcome to go and participate in that. I also had the opportunity to interview a woman who is known as the abuelita of the Zapatistas, the grandmother of the Zapatistas, and this is a woman who is 82 years old and is still very much involved with the Zapatistas communities. In her youth, she was able to go to Cuba during the first year of the revolution, met Che Guevara, and has just been very involved in the movement. And for me personally, it was very inspiring to see a woman at her age just still in the struggle. It really inspired you. So I came back. I felt that this fire that I have inside of me was sort of relit, refueled. I came back with so much energy. And when I had the opportunity to speak in front of the 800 people that were gathered there, which included the people from the community and just people from all over Mexico that were there, and in front of the Zapatista insurgents and commandants, it was a very powerful feeling. I was very nervous, but I knew that I was representing something bigger than myself. I was representing the work of the CIW, a work that has taught me so much and has helped me grow so much. As I looked into the eyes of every Zapatista, because that's all you can see from their faces, their faces are covered with ski masks. And I looked into their eyes and I felt that at that moment, I was sort of reconfirming my commitment to the struggle for justice for all peoples. I felt that at that moment everything made sense and that this path that I have chosen was the right path, and it was just a reaffirmation about my beliefs and what I want to do with my life and with my gifts from the Creator.
Hey,
Music from Dene Navajo singer-songwriter Louis Goni off his Kenyon Records CD, Sacred Mountains. The song was entitled Generations. I chose that song in keeping with our indigenous ethic of honoring our ancestors, the past generations, as well as honoring future generations to come. We try to honor the generations by what we of the present generation do in order to defend and care for Mother Earth and all the relations. Kinon Wantakwasin. This belief is shared by today's program guest, Miss Melody Gonzalez, who is here in the studio today. Melody, would you please continue talking about your feelings and share some of your experiences attending the 2005 Chiapas Encuentro hosted by Zapatistas?
And so it was something that was very powerful, almost unexplainable. I also had just an amazing time meeting the other people who were part of our collective. Most of them are from Los Angeles, and they're involved in different struggles there. And so it was very important, I think, for me to make those connections with those peoples. And I think we're definitely continuing. And since we've been back from Chiapas, we've been in communication about how we're going to continue to get involved and, you know, how we're going to build an even stronger movement here on this side of the border, not just for Mexican immigrants, but for all oppressed groups, and how we can really join forces and build alliances to create that better world that we all desire, that we're all working towards, because I think a better world is definitely under construction. One of the last things that I remember from my experience there in Chiapas, that right before going to the airport, I was talking to a woman, Marisa. She's a facilitator. She's sort of a person that connects sort of outsiders with the Zapatistas communities. The Zapatista communities know her well, and so when she comes in with a group of people, they receive them, and because they know that they're good people. And one of the things that she told me was that she was thinking about, in the Aztec culture and tradition, this belief of the every time the sixth son comes back is a time for justice for the poor, and the sixth son is envisioned to come in the year 2012. And so she was thinking about the sixth declaration that the Zapatistas came out, and then the coming of the sixth son, and she just felt, you know, that's not too far away. And she's told me, don't lose hope, we're almost there. We have to fight as hard as we can these next few years, but we will get, you know, what we're working for. And so it gave me just a lot of hope, and just I think another thing personally for me being there in Chiapas is that I often have struggled this idea of being the hyphenated American, Mexican American, and really feeling more like that little bar in between, and sometimes not feeling Mexican enough because I was born in what was Mexico, but now it's the stolen occupied territory of the United States. But at the same time, not feeling American enough because my first language is Spanish, and because of my roots and what I feel is in my heart. And so being there, I felt like I was a part of Mexico, it was a part of me. And it was sort of a decolonization of my mind and my heart. And just really appreciating my ancestors and where I come from and who I am, and that is why I'm involved, and the things that I'm involved in, the things that I believe in. So it was a very powerful experience for me personally to make that connection, to see my brothers and sisters struggling there in the southeast of Mexico, and here I am in the southeast of the United States, also as a part of the struggle. So definitely an amazing learning experience, something I'm going to continue to learn as the meetings with the Zapatistas closed, but now their next steps is that they're going to be visiting all these different communities of people who came to visit them. One of the things also that really impacted me was the last words of Subcomandante Marcos, the spokesperson of the Zapatistas. He talked a lot about listening and the importance of listening to each other. And that's what the Zapatistas were doing at these meetings for 16 hours, you know, in a day. They sat there attentively giving us their hearts, their minds, taking notes about the things that we were saying and really listening to what we had to say. And like they said, you know, we're building something that is not going to be a project of the Zapatistas. It's going to be something that we're all going to work on together.
When you spoke a moment ago about this path that you've chosen, I, as an indigenous person, see it kind of the other way around, that the spirits have chosen you. Kind of crying a little bit because I feel it in my heart, because we are indigenous peoples, you and I. And actually, we human beings are all indigenous. I said this at the Incentro in Immokalee, so that our so-called white brothers and sisters, our Anglo brothers and sisters, our allies, shouldn't feel divided. I'm always trying to remind myself not to be so divisionary, like not to allow the mentality of colonialism of borders, whether it's the physical border between the Rio Grande or what's now called North America and Mesoamerica, where the borders are in our mind as to who is indigenous and who is not. We are really all indigenous to Mother Earth. And I know, as a so-called American Indian, my elders always taught me not to judge someone on their skin color, but from their heart and their spirit. But it is really the ancestors, our Nititangenooks, the ancient peoples, who have gifted us in this generation. We are the seventh generation to be aware of these changes. I call it the Earth Justice Movement, so that it goes beyond just human rights, but all species rights. Would you please share with our worldwide listening audience a little bit about the concept of Zapatista, where that term originated? Because some of our listeners might not be aware that what you and I are talking about this evening is trying to help grow a new way of life that respects the sacredness of all life, of peace and justice and protecting Mother Earth. What I understand the Zapatista movement to be is an indigenous movement that also recognizes the protection of the earth as well as human rights. Would you share a little bit about what you understand Zapatista to be and what the Zapatista people themselves try to express and explain to all of you that were there, what the movement is about?
Definitely. Well, the term itself, Zapatistas, comes from Zapata, and a revolutionary hero in Mexico, Emiliano Zapata, who was one of the leaders of the Mexican Revolution of 1910, who fought for the ownership of land. His famous quote was that the land belongs to he who works the land, so that everybody could have access to the land. So after the revolution, there was a clause in an article in the Constitution that stated exactly that it was a victory of the revolution, that everybody that wanted to work the land had access to the land. Unfortunately, with the increase of free trade agreements and corporations, you know, going into these countries, and when NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, was signed between Canada, U.S., and Mexico, it completely eliminated Article 27 of the Mexican Constitution that guaranteed access to land. And so now land could be privatized. Corporations could come in and take over land. And so what's interesting is that although the Zapatistas began meeting in the mountains of the jungle of Chiapas in the 1980s, beginning to just to talk about their rights as people and just saying, you know, enough of the discrimination against indigenous people whose lands have been taken away and who had always been just isolated from Mexican society, looked down upon, forced to assimilate, to learn Spanish, for example. And so they began in the 1980s as, you know, this increase in globalization, neoliberalism was taking place, and their uprising on January 1st, 1994, coincidentally coincided with when NAFTA was supposed to take into effect. Chiapas is considered the poorest state in Mexico, but it's also considered the richest state as far as resources. I was just so impressed by the beauty of that land, the mountains, the corn, you know, all over. And unfortunately now with NAFTA, it's made it so easy for U.S. agribusiness to go into Mexico and sell corn for a lot of for way cheaper price. So a lot of people have been displaced and are not able to sustain themselves just from, you know, their small plot of corn. And so that's been a huge problem. And so the Zapatistas, their uprising in January 1st was, their outcry was, ya basta, enough. Enough of the government trying to take what's ours, enough of the government not respecting, you know, our traditions, our culture, our rights. And now, not just only our government, but now these foreigners coming in and trying to take, privatize our land, take, you know, our resources, and then use our labor, cheap labor, to create their wealth, their empire. After the uprising in January 1st, 1994, there was a ceasefire between the Mexican military and the Zapatistas, and then dialogue began with the government. There were some agreements that were signed, but of course were not respected. So what the Zapatistas did since is that they've created these autonomous communities that do not depend on the government, where they have their own sort of sustainable economies, and they don't have much, but it's their own. They have their own schools, their own ways of life. Their struggle is still for justice, for democracy, for land in Mexico. And it's really been something that's just inspired so many people outside of Mexico, people who, you know, after the fall of the Soviet Union had sort of lost hope in fighting for equality and for justice. And the Zapatista uprising sort of gave hope to a lot of people. There was, after that, unfortunately, there was a few years of silence from the Zapatistas. A lot of it had to do just with the fear, because so many people died in the ceasefire with the Mexican military, and it was just something very difficult for them that they had to deal with. But now they never stopped, though, sending out their letters and letting us know what was going on. And now again, they're in the spotlight with this new sort of this other campaign that they're building in Mexico.
Hello.
You are listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat Kitichi Native Center. Yat Kitichi Native Center defends Mother Earth and the cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Yat Kitichi Native Center is an intertribal culture and arts, environmental protection, social justice, and news media organization. Yat Kitichi Native Center portrays Native peoples and their worldviews in a more accurate and in-depth depiction of both our ancestral and contemporary cultures. Yat Kitichi Native Center serves to educate by providing a deeper understanding of our diverse cultures, arts, values, histories, and contemporary situations. Yat Kitichi tries to honor traditional ways by instilling an appreciation and respect for Mother Earth and tribal peoples throughout the world. Yat Kitichi Native Center educates the public on important issues facing Indigenous communities. We work in support of intertribal, cultural, environmental, and social justice issues by networking with other organizations and events which share our concerns. Yat Kitichi Native Center serves as a focal point for Native news and information. We maintain a documentary library for networking with the Native and international press. Yat Kitichi Native Center's Speakers Bureau provides spokespersons for school programs, conference speakers, and community presentations. Yat Kitichi Native Center is experienced in planning, promoting Native forums, symposiums, powwows, and cultural events. Yat Kitichi's Mishkwinataki Environment Program protects Mother Earth through conservation and restoration projects. Yat Kitichi's Environmental Education Program focuses on curriculum development, teacher training, and nature field trips. We are members of the professional organization, the North American Association of Environmental Education. Yat Kitichi's Kinonwatakusin Native Arts creates quality handcrafted traditional and contemporary fine arts. Please request our catalog of custom flutes, pottery, beaded necklaces, bracelets, earrings, leather pouches, hat bands, and chokers with bone. Yat Kitichi Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio Program, Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, honors Native American and Indigenous peoples throughout the world by being a voice for our ancestors, contemporary, and future generations. Please write us for our catalog of audio tapes available for purchase.
Native peoples throughout the world are concerned for the well-being of sacred Mother Earth, tribal sovereignty, and respect for cultural lifeways. If you appreciate hearing honoring Mother Earth indigenous voices, we ask you, our listeners, to help financially support our program to stay on the air. Wolf Mountain Radio is an all-volunteer production. Any financial contribution to honoring Mother Earth indigenous voices will be greatly appreciated. We thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth indigenous voices. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Please feel free to contact us about our consulting services, or if you or your organization is interested in hosting a speaker or educational forum. To contact Yat-Kidichi Native Center, write to Yat-Kidichi Native Center, 1731 16th Avenue Northeast, Naples, Florida, 34120, USA. Yat-Kidichi Native Center sincerely thanks you. Aho, Kinawatakwasin, to all of our relations.
Started by soldiers and cops, so they can make all their plans and negotiations about how they're gonna stay at the top. And when they're done, they'll release a few statements about how their charity will feed the whole world, when all they really did was solidify their strategy to ravage us with exploitation and war. How can we be silent with so much at stake? Your rules will just pay for the people to break. The world today, but we are 6 billion, and you are only 8. You say liberalized trade, yeah, it's been done before, so you can all profit off the blood of the poor. You say let market forces do that fine job. You won't take the blame for the billions you've robbed. G-A-I-M-F, WTO, FTAA, NAFTA, World Bank, NGO, clothing and acronyms, dressing up fine. This still ain't no more than the world's greatest crime. How can we be silent with so much at stake? The thoughts were just made for the people to break. We've been trying to dictate the entire world's fate, but we got 6 billion and you are only 6 billion and you are only 8.
from my friends at Riot Folk Music Collective, Ethan Miller and Kate Boverman, from their CD, If All the Land Would Rise. The name of that song was entitled Only Eight, referring to that elite global economic club of eight industrialized nations, commonly called the G8. The G8 global empire uses the weapons of economic, so-called trade and commerce, and international finance, such as the North American Free Trade Agreement, Central American Free Trade Agreement, General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, the World Trade Organization, and programs of the World Bank and International Monetary Fund to carry out their warfare. Many of us around the world term this growing control by governments and corporations as globalization. At present, the G8 has now grown to include four more countries, now making it the group of 12. All over the world, poor people are further suffering from the so-called new political economic order. I am proud to say that many indigenous peoples, such as our sisters and brothers in Chiapas, are fighting this threat. Prior to our Yacht Kitishi Native Center program identification, we featured Hopi singer-songwriter Clark Ten Kahangva's song, The Purple and Yellow Corn is My Mother, from his Canyon Records CD entitled Songs from the Hopi Mesas, Hear My Song, Hear My Prayer. I played that prayer song to corn as a reminder that maize, corn, is a sacred plant to indigenous peoples, not only used for food, but also for ceremonies. When NAFTA took effect, it not only displaced the traditional native corn varieties grown by indigenous farmers for centuries, which were passed down by generation to generation, but also economically disrupted the corn market by multinational companies' manipulation of GMOs, genetically modified corn, into the agribusiness sector. This greatly hurt peasant farmers, such as the Indians of Chiapas and throughout Mesoamerica. There was no coincidence that the Zapatista uprising in January 1994 occurred at the time in which NAFTA was announced to take effect. Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Native Radio. I want to again sincerely thank my guest today, Melody Gonzalez, for sharing her spirit heart with us on the radio. Please listen next week for part two of my interview with Melody as we continue our conversation about her experience participating in the 2005 Zapatista Encuentro in Chiapas, Mexico. We shall conclude today's program with a song by Robert Tree Cody and Xavier Cuijas Y. Whitehall entitled Crossroads from Canyon Records CD, Voices Across the Canyon, Volume 5. This beautiful song blends music of Native peoples of the Great Plains and Mexico. Until the next Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, this is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker, thanking you for listening to Wolf Mountain Native Radio. Aho, kinoan wan takwasin to all of our relations. Thank you.
Thank you.